We are live with Alexander McCurris in London. Alexander, how you doing?
I'm very well and very pleased to be here again on Friday doing our weekly live stream now.
Yes. How is Alexander's mic? How is my mic? I'm just looking at the levels, Alexander. What's going on in the news as I check things out? I've titled this live stream, Alexander, Elections in China. Hitting bridges and bulletproof glass. Bulletproof glass is, of course, Zelensky.
Of course.
Has to now give speeches behind bulletproof glass. Alexander Stoop tells us that Ukraine has won.
Absolutely.
Zelensky is now giving speeches behind bulletproof glass. And then we had Trump's speech yesterday, and hitting bridges refers to Iran and the United States.
And just remember that Zelensky, just a few days ago, about two weeks ago, was saying, you know, he's going to start a 40-day campaign, which will shake the Kremlin and to create a crisis there. And, well, we have got a crisis, but it's not in Moscow. It's in Kiev. And as you rightly say, he's making speeches behind bulletproof glass. Well, I have to say, it's difficult sometimes to maintain a mood of optimism. But the last couple of days have been absolutely wild and extraordinary. I think you identified the key topics. An extraordinary speech from Donald Trump, blaming his defeat 2020, essentially on Chinese interference. When you take a step back and consider the information he's providing, it really doesn't add up. I mean, it does. I mean, I suspect a lot of what he said happened, but it doesn't amount to interference because, as you correctly said to me just a moment ago, a lot of the information is actually open source information. You can go get it. So, I mean, it really doesn't make a huge amount of sense. And he's now using the subject of the 2020 election, about which, by the way, I had and have a great deal of sympathy with him. I think that the way that election was conducted was profoundly wrong. I've got doubts about the outcome of that election would be an understatement. But now he's turning all that round and he's using it to start making attacks on China. And the way he spoke about China, it's difficult to imagine that we're going to see anything other than an all-out clash between the United States and China before very long. And we've got an all-out clash ongoing between the United States and Iran. And it's little different from what we saw in March, except, of course, that in March it all went badly wrong. And we had the depletion of the reserves. And we've every reason to think that the reserves are even more depleted. And the inventories are even more depleted. The inventories of weapons are even more depleted. And we have, as you said, Zelensky talking to people in the midst of victory behind bulletproof glass. And this morning, there are reports that Fedorov is being investigated for corruption. A corrupt Ukrainian minister. Who would have thought it? I mean, real stun and shock that such a thing could happen. And if I could just say about Fedorov, what are people in the West saying about him? Financial Times writes an editorial in which it uses the word genius to describe him. I nearly fell off my chair when I saw that. Is that a joke? No, it was meant in total seriousness. But anyway, an extraordinary time and a very dangerous time altogether. Wars, conflicts, relations between the great powers in a state of utter crisis, total lunacy raging across Europe, massive belligerence. And of course, remember the grain deal of 2022 to ensure that grain would be exported without a problem from the Black Sea? Well, that's all now gone. And who basically destroyed it? The Ukrainians did. They started to attack Russian grain ships. And of course, the Russians are now attacking and obliterating the port of Odessa, and they are obliterating Ukrainian grain ships. And I was reading again in the Financial Times how global food prices are rising. We are in a grip of an extraordinary lunacy, hysteria. You could probably find even stronger words. It makes one, well, it makes me deeply depressed. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Grain deals. There's no more grain deals. There's no more international law. All of that is over. It's done with.
Piracy.
Piracy, yeah.
Ships, exactly. Seized.
Yeah.
I mean, we have situations where Greek shipowning companies are having to press the Greek government to get the European Union to understand a few of the economic realities. And also, by the way, to advise them about what international maritime law is all about. I mean, that really, for me, having had dealings with Greek ship owners, I mean, that really is incredible. When they are the people who are keeping us sane, it tells you an awful lot.
Yeah, well, they're trying to put the 44 euro price cap on Russian oils. On Russian oil, this is so stupid. I mean, this is fantasy world. And even the Greek ship owners told the Europeans. They said, "Look, if you guys put a 44 euro price cap, all that's going to happen is that those ships are going to change flags, and we're going to lose revenue. We're going to lose money."
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's just beyond dumb. We have a war in Iran. We have Hormuz closed. We have a blockade going on. We have the price of oil going up. And they're talking about a €44 price cap.
Yes. I mean, it's just, as you said, I mean, it's just dumb. But it's not just dumb. It's dangerous, too.
Yeah. Yeah, there's international, all that stuff is out the window, Alexander. Mm-hmm. Trump on his speech with China yesterday. Election meddling from China, Hillary Clinton, 2015.
Exactly.
So such disappointment in Trump. It's hard to even express the disappointment with Trump. He basically did exactly what Hillary Clinton did in 2015 with Russian meddling. Now he's saying it's China meddling.
Exactly.
And he's setting the whole thing up for where he went with Russia. From 2015 all the way to the conflict now, it's all connected. He's setting it up with China. For 2030 when we're supposed to get this big smash. Everyone's going to go to war with everybody else in 2030.
Absolutely. Allegedly. Absolutely. And can I just say that before we started this program, we had a few words that we exchanged with each other. And you said something which I think is true, that China absolutely needs to take note of all of this. I mean, I think there is still a belief in China that they can somehow manage the Americans. I've experienced this. I've spoken to Chinese. They're very, very overconfident. They've come very far, very fast. They've seen their economy grow to enormous size. They have enormous technological and industrial resources. They assume that they can manage the Americans, just as once upon a time the Russians thought they could manage the Americans. It is a profound mistake.
Yeah, and they need to stop funding the Ukrainian drones, the European drones.
Absolutely.
They need to sort that out.
Absolutely.
ASAP.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're going to need Russia. The Chinese are going to need Russia. So they better knock off all of this drone stuff. Yeah, it goes to Malaysia, the Philippines, or whatever country the drones go to. Yeah. And it's difficult for us to track it. Come on now. Come on. Who are you kidding?
Exactly. Yeah,
who are you kidding?
Yes.
They need to cut it out. And exactly. Russia needs to insist that they cut it out. Otherwise, the United States should cut Ukraine loose and just start looking towards mending things with Russia if they really want to go after China. I mean, which one is it?
Well, exactly. Well, that's the other thing. I mean, we have a situation where you get every so often some American strategists, Elbridge Colby is one example, who says, look, we can't take on everybody all at once. We've got to prioritize. We've got to take care of the heartland. We've got to take care of Latin America. Then our major rival is China. We have to ease off from Europe. But those arguments, which, by the way, I only agree with up to a point, because I don't think the United States should be looking for quarrels or conflicts with anyone. I mean, I don't see why it needs to. But anyway, those arguments, which are somewhat more rational then the neocon arguments always fail, because what the neocons want is war with everybody all the time simultaneously.
Yeah, but they've made the decision. I mean, the decision has been taken to go after China. Okay, that's your peer competitor. Mm. That's the country that you're going to take on eventually.
Yeah. Yes.
And I think yesterday Trump's speech was the gauntlet being thrown, right?
Yeah.
Here exactly. We go. It begins right it now. Begins. And we're going to start things off with Chinese election meddling, just like Russian meddling in 2015. Exactly. Right? So this is how we're kicking things off.
And to remind,
the decision's been made.
And to remind people of what Alex just said a moment ago, which is absolutely true. Relations between Russia and the West, Russia and the United States, were already very fragile in 2015. But it was after 2015 that we had a continuous slide into the all-out conflict in Ukraine and the disastrous situation that we see today. We would not have had a conflict like the one we have now if it were not for what Hillary Clinton did back in 2015.
Yeah, and we're heading down that same path with China.
We're getting exactly.
Yeah. And Russia could make the difference either way, yeah, on either side.
Yes. Well, as Putin pointed out to Biden long ago, I mean, they had a meeting in 2011 when Biden came to Moscow to try to get Putin, to persuade Putin not to stand in the 2012 presidential election. And Putin said that it's in Russia that we make those decisions, not in the United States. And Biden told Putin, well, you can't talk to us like that. You're not in a position to dominate anybody. And Putin said, no, we're not in a position to dominate anybody, but we are in a position to decide who dominates. We know about that discussion. There's been confirmation of it from both Russian and American sources.
Yeah. All right. Should we get to questions?
Absolutely.
Let's jump right in. Before we begin, make sure to like this video, everybody. Hit that like button. If you're not subscribed, please subscribe. And also, Alexander, we should plug the 1776 event.
We certainly should. Actually,
there are tickets left, so go to 1776 Law Center. That's the address.
Absolutely. And if you're in the United States, absolutely you should. And you will be able to meet us there. And you will also be able to meet all sorts of other people, Daniel Davis, Larry Johnson, all sorts of fine and excellent people.
Robert Barnes,
of course.
Of course.
He is the man who's managing the whole thing. But you can go and you can speak to all of us and meet us properly. And I mean, you know, and it will be a wonderful event altogether. I think a historic event, because it is out of events like that that the seeds of the future are sown.
All right. On that note, Ruko, thank you for that super sticker. Nikos. Mm-hmm. Nikos says, before I begin, let me just say I am an atheist, but Lindsey Graham's death feels like divine intervention. If hell exists, may he burn forever in it. He was, for me, one of the worst people in the U.S. Now, the last neocon student of Brzezinski remaining is Hillary Clinton. Her time will come. It's probably more students of Brzezinski than Hillary. Probably
I agree with that. I agree with that, absolutely. Can I just say, Nikos, I mean, I never wish hell on anybody. And of course, as you know, I am a Christian. But I agree with you. Lindsey Graham was a monster, and it's far better that we don't have him in the world now. I mean, given all the other things that are going on, having Lindsey Graham advocating war all the time at a time when we are on the brink of war, it's better that he's gone.
But with Lindsey Graham going, though, there will be another 10.
There will be another Graham's one.
Popping up. Yeah.
There will be another one. Yeah.
Agu 13431 says, listening to Trump's speech is like playing chess with a pigeon. It knocks off the pieces, craps all over the board, then struts around proud as if it had won.
what a wonderful metaphor you've come up with, just to say.
India Ovid Films says, of the British prime ministers since 2017, May Johnson, Truss, Sunak, and Starmer, which one do you think performed the least badly?
Oh, they all performed terribly. I mean, without any question. And I'm not going to say which one was less bad than the others. You could perhaps argue that Sunak took a terrible situation and made it rather less worse than all the others have contrived to do. But then I know a lot about Sunak, and I know a lot of the choices he made. He knew that some of the things that he was doing were going to make the situation worse, and he nonetheless went ahead and did them. So I can't really have any sympathy for him. And Burnham, by the way, is going to be no better.
I can answer that question. I think Truss was the best because she was only in there for like a month.
That's probably true, yeah.
How much damage could you do in a month?
Well, right? Indeed, yeah.
Maybe Nord Stream, right? I don't know. There was that message exchange. Absolutely. Allegedly between Truss and, who was it, like Blinken or somebody?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it was Blinken.
Did that really happen?
I believe it did, yes. Yeah. So who knows?
Who knows? Elza says, I'm not a military person, but I like to hear Suravikin's name again to see him back with other generals in command.
Yes, I had a very interesting message about him yesterday. We said that people have misunderstood what Suravikin, what his actual background is, that he was originally a special forces intelligence officer. He then was very successful and obtained high command training from the General Staff Academy. So he has experience in high command, but he's always been an expert in irregular war. And apparently he was the person who basically devised the strategy of capturing fortified cities through infiltration tactics, and that he tested them out in Bakhmut, where they achieved a great deal of success. So if you are looking at a potential man to run an offensive to capture Odessa, which you do not want to destroy, by the way, for all sorts of reasons. If you know anything about Odessa, you would know what a wonderful 19th century city it is, beautiful architecture, then maybe Suravikin is the right person for it.
If Suravikin returns, then it means that the Kremlin is getting serious.
I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
General Armageddon.
General Armageddon, yeah. The Suravikin line.
Yeah, Suravikin line, exactly.
Yeah. S. Scooby says, is Russia not a substitute drone market for China instead of Ukraine or third-party nations, or do they still worry about diplomatic shielding?
I'm not quite sure what you mean. I mean, Russia is a major drone market for China. I suspect, and I get to say this, I mean, there may be strategies behind what China is doing, but I think a lot of this is all about corruption and people making money in China too. I mean, this is, or if this is the explanation that explains strange activities of this sort, then I think it's nearly always the correct explanation, just to say.
Yeah, a lot of it is about money. Most of it is just all about money.
Money, yeah.
Nikki Ball says, is there any way Vance can make a difference leading up to and after the midterms?
Well, that remains to be seen. I think he has had a disastrous year, by the way. I mean, there's no simple way to put it. I mean, he advocated disengagement from Ukraine. We know this. He also wanted to come to some kind of understanding with Iran. He opposed the attack on Iran. He's been proved right on all of these things, but he's been pushed aside. And I don't get the sense that the president, Donald Trump, listens to him very much.
You know, if you listen to him, then we wouldn't be in this mess. No, exactly. The world would not be in this mess if you listen to him.
Exactly.
Yeah, so he doesn't. Yeah, unfortunately. Nikki Ball says, is Pakistan as free from coup attempts and decapitation strikes as it would like to present itself? Could Mossad and the CIA part company on this one?
No, absolutely, it's not. I mean, Pakistan has had a history of many coups, and many leaders in Pakistan have lost their lives at various times. I mean, Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, who was the iconic leader of Pakistan in the 1970s was overthrown in a coup and then executed. So absolutely, Pakistan can absolutely be, is very vulnerable, historically has been very vulnerable to coups and decapitation strikes, and there's no reason to think that that has changed. It does have apparently large and rather well-trained armed forces. So it's not a pushover, but it's vulnerable in many respects. And again, it's riddled with people who, if the United States, if Mossad, if the CIA wanted to find collaborators, it would find them.
From Nikos. Alex, I'll be honest, your attitude towards Russia is unpleasant. I expect this passive-aggressive snarkiness from the mainstream media, not you. I think he's addressing me, Alexander. Nico says, behind all that, though, there's a legit question for you. You laughed with Stanislav about it, so I ask, what are your solutions? What do you want Russia to do? I want to know if I agree with you. I think my position is very clear, Nikos. Very, very clear. I think Russia has won the war against Ukraine, without a doubt. They have defeated Ukraine inside of Ukraine, and I think that Russia has lost much of its deterrence inside of Russia, and they need to get that deterrence back without attacking Europe and going to World War III. And I think there's a lot of asymmetric things that Russia could do to get that deterrence back. I'm talking about inside of Russian territory. That's my position. It's very clear. I think when it comes to the conflict in Ukraine, Russia has absolutely won or is on the way towards winning. I think this cannot be argued or disputed. They've taken Konstantinovka. Alexander, in his video update yesterday, talked about how Liman is ready to fall. They're 6 kilometers, Alexander, from Kramatorsk now, is what I hear. So, I mean, as far as Donbass and Ukraine, the conflict on the front line, Russia's got this one. But I believe that and we've discussed this, me and Alexander, in many videos, I believe that one of the big mistakes that Putin made, and I really believe it was a big mistake, is that he trusted Trump in 2023, right before Trump was elected. Towards the end, December, Trump made a speech or he gave an interview. Biden had just approved or had just launched long-range missiles into Russian territory pre-2014. Putin said that was the red line and Russia was about to do something. And then Trump gave an interview and said, when I become president, there is no way that we're going to launch any type of strikes into Russia. And Putin believed it. He trusted it. And so he backed off from that red line. I think that the collective West has taken advantage of that ever since, including Trump. So that's my position on it,
The other thing to say, Nikos, is that Alex's position is one which is held by many people in Russia itself. And I don't find Alex's position sarky or anything of that kind. As you know, we have nuances, we have differences of approach here, he and I. But that is necessary. What is happening is that it reproduces a debate that is taking place inside Russia. And since it's our purpose as a channel to comment and inform people about these things, it would be absolutely remiss of us and of Alex not to express these views, especially given that he holds them.
Yeah, and I've been to Russia many, many times, Nikos, many times.
Yes.
So I feel like I have a pretty good understanding of things. I'm not saying I have an understanding of the Russian people and how they think, but I think I have a pretty good understanding of what's happening in Russia. And I know, Nikos, that you're very concerned about nuclear war and all of that. I'm not, none of us, not me or Alexander, is saying that Russia should strike Europe and go to all-out war. We've never, ever said that. When I say that Russia has asymmetric things that it could do to establish deterrence, I think it could do a lot of things that do not require attacking Europe or going to war or anything like that. Could do stuff on the media side of things, which we've talked about in many videos. It could do stuff on the oil and gas side of things. I mean, the Kremlin has many, many ways to reestablish deterrence or to send the message to the Trump administration, knock it off.
Yes.
Even a phone call, Alexander, from Putin, even Putin telling Trump, knock it off, like he did with May 9th Victory Day.
Yes.
Where he told Trump, don't you dare attack us on May 9th. Don't send any drones into Moscow. And Trump backed off. Yes. But he made the mistake where they then allowed Trump to take credit.
Exactly. For the ceasefire. Exactly. Yeah. That was a disastrous mistake. I mean, that was absolute. That tells you again, one of the major weaknesses that the Kremlin has, that they just don't understand, that constantly flattering, appeasing Trump in this fashion, it really isn't helpful. I mean, he takes the praise and he takes the flattery and he gives back nothing. Mm-hmm. And the Russians are now saying, and Putin is sort of hinting to this, to it himself now, that Anchorage was all an exercise in tricking the Russians all over again, getting them to think that, you know, the Americans were moving towards their position so as to lure them into a ceasefire. So why then go on talking about the spirit of Anchorage, as some Russian officials do? Why continue to have Kirill Dmitriev running around constantly talking to Witkoff? It does create a very bad impression, and it creates a bad impression with many people in Russia itself.
Yeah, I prefer Lavrov to handle all of these things.
Absolutely.
That's just my own opinion. Anyway.
Well, of course, absolutely. Yeah. And it should be. It should always be the foreign ministry.
Yeah. Mr. Jabberwock says, we need a law that all neocons must visit Kiev. What do you make of Zakharova's comment? Actually, was that a real statement from Zakharova? Ursula, because of the Russian strikes into Kiev, Ursula had to go into a bunker during the award ceremonies that they were having. And then Zakharova, allegedly, there was a comment where she made, and I haven't been able to confirm it.
No.
So I don't know if she really said this, but she said that allegedly that the holidays to Kiev are coming to an end or something along those lines.
I haven't been able to corroborate.
I don't know if Chad can confirm that statement that
yes,
she made.
I haven't been able to corroborate it. But I discussed this all extensively in my program yesterday. And I made a point, which is that this is the first time that the Russians have persisted in carrying out a major missile and drone strike on Kiev at precisely the time when there were a large number of Western dignitaries in the city. So maybe Zakharova didn't say that this is the time for Western visits, you know, Western holidays to Kiev, that those are ending. Maybe she didn't say that. But in a sense, actions speak louder than words. The Russians prepared the strike and went ahead with it, regardless of the fact that there were Westerners in the city. Now, the attack, of course, was focused on facilities on the outskirts, but still.
It was reported in Russian media. Thank you, Rat Stranger.
Okay, well, there you go. Thank you.
It was reported in Russian media, then, yeah.
Yeah.
She made that statement. Okay, interesting statement. Yeah, it confirms your reporting from yesterday, if anything, yeah.
Can I just say something else? I mean, we're in the business of criticizing the Russians at the moment about some things. The Russian Foreign Ministry, its website is about always about 3 days behind the news. I mean, it is unbelievable. So you go to the website and, you know, you have a comment like this of Zakharova's and it should be out there at once. And you have to wait days before it comes. And I don't mean the English translation, by the way. I mean the Russian transcript of it. I mean, it baffles me.
Mm. Nico says, you keep bringing North Korea as an example of deterrence. We do. But they have no resources for the U.S. to attack it. They don't care about their nukes. Since the beginning of the nuclear age, there was always the understanding of, are you prepared to end the world if a nuclear nation attacks another? For the first time in history, the U.S. has shown that, yes, we are willing to cause a nuclear war to preserve our primacy. Mm. The decision has been made.
Mm. The North Korea has many resources. It's actually, in mineral terms, a very, very mineral-rich country. And one of the things that we learned after the fall of the Soviet Union was the extent to which North Korea was very tightly integrated into the Soviet economic system. I mean, to the point where Gosplan, the Soviet Union's central planning agency, set targets for North Korean factories and mines and things of that kind. So the first thing to say is that the Duce ideology of total self-reliance should be taken with very much of a mountain of salt. It's not quite what it seems. And secondly, it is resource rich. Now, I think the North Koreans made a strategic decision at the end of the 1990s, early 2000s, that they would pursue a strategy of deterrence. And they made enormous sacrifices to achieve it. And they did achieve it. And, well, we now see the results. I mean, Kim Jong-un is now once again fully rehabilitated with China and Russia. The economic links between China and Russia have been restored. There is apparently, and I take this now from all sorts of videos that I've been seeing on YouTube, an economic boom underway in North Korea. Deterrence worked.
As Scooby says, do globalized commercial networks that extend even into friendly nations make military action an impossible way for Russia to restore deterrence?
No, I don't agree. And I think that one of the big stories that I think both of us have taken from our recent trips to Russia is that these global links are gradually withering and ending. Russia is moving into a completely different economic system from the one that the globalist system that it used to be very, very much a part of.
Fuzzyball says, why doesn't Russia go to China and tell China that all the drones and drone parts Europe is buying and that Russia will buy all of it? They can afford it.
Well, indeed, very good point. Very good point. I have been told that in every single meeting between Russian officials and Chinese officials, extending all the way to Putin and Xi, Putin's meetings with Xi, the Russians bring up this topic of Chinese drones and drone parts going to Europe and being screwed together and used to attack Russia. And the Chinese, I've already said what I think are the reasons, they just bat these complaints off. Now, whether the solution is the one that you say, it might be so. But think of what the implications of that would be. I mean, it would be like Russia, in a kind of a way, paying some kind of tribute to China so that China doesn't arm its adversaries. Independent sovereign countries like the Russians generally don't like to be put in that kind of situation. It puts them very much in the position of a supplicant and a vassal towards China, which is, of course, the opposite of what they want to be.
So what is the solution?
What is the solution? I think you highlighted
it. It's nutty. It's crazy that it's happening.
Yeah, I think you highlighted it in a program that we are going to be publishing, if we haven't already published it, which is that the Russians can simply say, look, we have gone out of our way to be as helpful to you as possible in all sorts of ways. Either this ends, either this stops, or from now on, we're going to be less helpful. And I mean, the Russians have been very helpful. I mean, they helped China, for example, to create its early warning system, early warning system for ballistic missiles. We know this. The Russians still provide China with engines for Chinese commercial and military aircraft. So, the Russians have leverage over China, and they could enforce it. And actually, I think the Chinese would respect it. This can't be overall, if you look at the wider scale of things, such a big trade for China, drone parts to Malaysia that then get sold on to Europe.
Yeah. Nico says, you ask why Russia is still selling Europe energy. Businessmen, not Russia, sell gas because, like Western businessmen, they only care about money. It's the same thing as India selling oil to Europe. It's the same thing as China selling drones to Ukraine. But you don't criticize China at all. China is so big and strong, they definitely don't care only about making money and using their allies. I'm sure their 100th exercise near Taiwan stopped the recent HIMARS installation. Whatever.
Well, I think we just have been criticizing China quite a lot over the course of this program, Nikos, just to say. But I mean, fundamentally, you are right. Business people go where the money is. I mean, that is what they're programmed to do. If they didn't do it, they wouldn't be business people. So I've no doubt at all that the major reason why Russia sells LNG to Europe at this time, even though it is at odds with things that Putin has said, and what one might think would be proper Kremlin policy, is because the gas industry in Russia, which is very big and very influential and contributes a great deal to the budget, the Russian budget, is telling the Kremlin, look, don't get in our way. We play a big role in the economy. We need to sell our gas. We haven't yet nailed everything down with our Asian partners. The Europeans are offering us a lot of money, and we need the money. And I think that is basically what's going on.
It's such a crazy situation when you think about it. The whole thing. I was thinking about it this morning. The Europeans, they go on and on and whine about China funding Russia's war machine, when the reality is that China is also funding Ukraine's war machine, or at least they're giving the Europeans a way to fund Ukraine's war machine. At the same time, it's crazy. At the same time, Russia sells LNG to Europe, and that LNG is used to power up the factories that assemble the Chinese drones, while at the same time, Europe is giving billions and billions to Russia in purchasing that LNG, which goes into into the Russian economy and the Russian
and the Europeans are giving money to China, to Chinese drone factories, in order to provide get drone components for Ukraine, drone factories which they have themselves sanctioned. It doesn't get weirder than that. I mean, it really is. I mean, as you rightly said, it is absolutely scrambled.
Yeah. Sticky Mark says, they say that those the gods seek to destroy, they first make crazy. So hang on to your sanity. Thanks, lads, and all the Duran community. The Sane Asylum. LNPs in Yorkshire, UK.
Yes, absolutely. It's a wonderful quote, by the way. Much dispute about who came up with it. I think it was Euripides, by the way, just to say.
Mr. Chabawak, do the neocons actually want to win or just to profit from the grift of the military-industrial complex?
I think it depends which neocon. But I think if you're talking about the hardline ideological ones, they do want to win. In fact, winning for them is something that is existential, and they cannot imagine a situation where they don't win. And that's the problem. I mean, they don't accept any limits on their power. They don't, or the US's power. They have no reverse gear, as we said many, many times. They are perfectly willing to drive the car off the cliff because that's who they are.
Incroyablist says, would you agree that Russia is answering the NATO proxy war in Ukraine with their own proxy war against the US in the Middle East?
Yes, I think they are. And I think that is playing a role. But because it's under the surface, it doesn't have the kind of political impact that perhaps the Russians expected. And it does not restore deterrence for that reason.
Very much under the surface. Yeah. Even Trump doesn't admit it.
I mean, no, the Trump doesn't admit it. The Russians don't admit it. The Iranians don't admit it. So when it's so far under the surface, it loses its political effect.
Yeah, very true. From Ari Yaratna says, why do the transport lines still open for dignitaries to visit Kiev? Why give all these free publicity to Z with Van der Crazy Stammer, etc.?
Well, we've just heard what Zakharov, apparently she did say it, and we saw the big strike on Kiev. My own view, and I'm going to say this, I think that one of the reasons that the Russians are now doing certain things that they didn't do before is because their own capability has developed. I mean, previously, back in 2022, 2023, it was pre-programmed missile strikes, only able to strike at big facilities. Now they're able to attack moving trains, for example, which until about a year ago, they couldn't really do.
One second, Alexander. We answered that one. The neocon just from Nikos. The West is bankrupt, and the only way they can preserve power is through war. Russia isn't encouraging them by not striking Europe. They want war. They are just looking for an excuse so that we, the sheep, will follow them into World War III. And if you think that's crazy, whenever these morons ask us to jump, we always say how high. Greece is the proof. Russia and Putin now are in the impossible situation of either absorbing the hits or ending the world together with the West. This is the reality.
I know that you're worried about this. I mean, I'm going to say something straight away, Nikos. I mean, there are grounds to your worries. I mean, Gordon Hahn wrote this piece, which has had a big effect on me, saying, do not underestimate the irrationality of some of the people who are in charge of policy in the West, especially in Europe, that they do indeed want war. And Alex has had discussions with some people who are very well connected, extremely well connected, and they have confirmed to him that what Gordon Hahn said is exactly true. So we do face this problem that there is maybe not a very large group of people, but a very powerful and very well positioned group of people who are not only not afraid of war, but who desire it. I don't think this is true of Western militaries overall. I don't think this is true of European populations. And it, of course, varies from country to country. I think Greece, where we went through a terrible experience during the Eurozone crisis, I think people there remain still very demoralized and very passive, though I don't think many of them privately agree with what is happening. In other countries where there is more political agency, you do see some stirrings of dissent, and especially in Germany, about which we've done a recent program.
From Matthew, absolutely no chance of war between Europe and Russia or America and China. It's all to either transfer wealth or rearrange energy contracts.
You know, I used to agree with you. I think I used to think very much as you do, that, you know, that ultimately this is all a cynical thing, that it's a grift, that it's all about making money. I think there is still a huge amount of in that. The trouble is that a grift that has been pursued so obsessively and for so long, and which has made so many people so very rich, is a grift they can't give up. And if they can't give up, they start to internalize and accept some of the rationalizations they make for it. I have seen this happen, by the way, in my previous career. The way in which ultimately people end up believing their own stories. And I think there is a strong element of this. So, yes, I think you're, as I said, 90% right. It's that 10% where I think we need to be worried. I discounted the risk of war a few years ago. I don't discount it so much today.
Yeah, I agree with what Matthew is saying. I agree with you, Alexander, as well. Never in my wildest dreams did I think that would I have ever believed that Russia would be attacked by the collective West in such a way. Yeah. Nuclear Russia, that the United States would be bombing Iran or Tehran, that the Strait of Hormuz would close. I mean, if you had asked me these things, if you had asked us these things 5 years ago, we would have said, absolutely, what are you talking about? Absolutely. Drones hitting Moscow? Never in a gazillion years.
Yes.
Or the United States launching airstrikes into Tehran or knocking out bridges? Never going to happen. And here we are.
And here we are, exactly.
Sean Teo says, can you share anything about what came of your nomad capitalist trip to Malaysia?
Well, we went, we saw, we met all sorts of very, very interesting people. It was very educational. We met and heard Nigel Farage, for example. It did not affect our own business model because, of course, this is a business model which we have developed and which is transparent and which we feel is beneficial for us and ultimately for our community too. Because as it is transparent, people can see exactly who we are and what we do.
John Roberts, USA, says, if Russia subdues Ukraine, the U.S. arsenal gets exhausted against Iran and China. It's exhausted against Iran, and China withholds rare earths, preventing rearming. Then is this the storm before the calm?
You know, you have something in what you say. There was an incredible article in the Financial Times, again, which has attracted far less attention than it deserves, partly because it was very badly written, by the way. But it spoke about panic and hysteria amongst Western companies that are trying to acquire rare earths. Hysteria and panic are not my words. They are in that article. They speak about the Chinese having massively complex questionnaires and compliance systems now, which every buyer of rare earths from China must go through, any Western buyer of rare earths from China must go through. They say that the Chinese are already insisting that rare earths must only be used for specific civilian purposes, not dual-use purposes, not military purposes, which suggests that the MIC is being suffocated, that it is not getting the flow of rare earths that it used to. The article spoke about a very unstable trade with the Chinese switching on and switching off rare earth exports in very unpredictable ways and doing it constantly over the last year or so, of shortages of other key minerals like tungsten, for example, and even copper. The Chinese have recently blocked exports of helium as well. So all of this is going on. It's going on under the surface. It is largely unreported. The Pentagon must be running through its rare earth stockpiles. You would assume that this is causing concern, especially as they continue to deplete their precision guided weapons, which are the ones that need the rare earths. So what exactly is going on? I mean, why are these decisions being made to escalate at precisely the moment when shortages of rare earths are building? Why are we talking about bone-crushing sanctions against the Russians and about blocking imports of Russian energy into Europe when we have a global energy shortage? Why is the European Union talking about a $44 price cap on Russian oil? Why are we sitting back and allowing Ukraine to attack grain ships and to destroy the entire system of exports from the Black Sea of grain, both from Ukraine and Russia, which is already pushing up food prices? There is so much here that simply does not make sense.
Fuzzy Ball says, who are the real unseen power players who determine EU policy? Because Ursula von der Leyen and Kaja Kallas aren't coming up with this on their own.
No, they're not. They meet with all their friends in Davos every year, and a lot of the decisions are made there. I've said this many times. Davos is, it's a place, and the people who go there, predominantly, they are European old money. They came together in the late 60s. They launched this project for first Europeanization of Europe, as they called it, and then for globalization. And of course, they've done very well out of this, because it means that if you're a rich person in, let's say, the Netherlands, you can move your money around with great ease. You can avoid taxes. You can invest in all sorts of places. It works for you. It works personally for you. And they want to keep it going. And they are implacably hostile to anything and anyone who stands in their way. So that's, they are the, in, if you're talking about Europe, they are the ultimate power brokers.
Blip Blop Zoop says, all this talk about oil reserves emptying and economic catastrophe doesn't add up to Trump massively escalating in Iran. Is this talk just hopium?
Well, I wonder. I mean, but bear in mind that Trump himself came out and said when he signed the MOU that he signed it because he'd been told by the industry that there were only 4 weeks of usable reserves in the caverns left. So what has happened to change his mind? I've not seen anything that's happened since then that would make him change his mind. So again, you know, I gave a litany of things which just don't make sense, that just don't add up. Maybe there is some key and explanation to all this, which I just don't know. But based on the information that we are receiving, the situation does indeed look very bad. And the decisions, therefore, look irrational.
S. Scooby says, worrying trends. Will a global depression mean even more? Mean even more war, military stimulus being seen as an economic stabilizer.
That is the rhetoric that we hear everywhere in the West now, that increased military production, and that will secure your industrial base and will somehow guarantee future prosperity. Every economist will tell you, every economic, better, let's forget about the economists. Let's talk about the historians of economics, who, in my opinion, are a much more reputable academic body of people. They will tell you that it never works like this, that focusing excessively on weapons ultimately degrades your economic system. It also plunges you into current account deficits, because you still have to feed your people, you still have to provide them with some consumer goods. If your factories are not producing them, then you have to import them. So it guarantees ultimately more economic instability, not less. The object lesson, the two object lessons here are Germany in the 1930s, the Soviet Union in the 1970s. In the 1930s, Germany was spending something like 40% of its GDP on defense. It was running massive current account deficits. It was becoming more and more unstable. And many historians, going back to your point, believe that this was one of the reasons why Germany took the plunge in 1939 and went for war. And it was the Soviet Union was also excessively overspending and overinvesting in defense production. And they took a different approach. They sought detente and they sought a means to reduce defense spending. But I mean, and they did eventually bring it down. But again, all of that overinvestment in defense didn't do any good for them either.
Nico says, eventually in Russia, the moron who says what the mob wants, Medvedev, will be in charge, but not you or Stanislav. Ask yourself, and then what? It's beyond naive to think that the people who want to bring nukes in Finland won't use them if Medvedev strikes Europe, but whatever the mob wants.
Medvedev, first of all, is not stupid. He's an extremely clever man. I mean, he's just an extremely clever man. He is the de facto head of Russia's military-industrial complex. I mean, the fact that we see this enormous increase in weapons production is due to his undoubted management skills. And he is a brilliant lawyer, so much so that there's been several suggestions at various times that he might eventually become Russia's chief justice. And, you know, when I say brilliant lawyer, I'm not saying that casually. I've seen some of the quality of his legal arguments. They are those of an extremely good lawyer, indeed. So Medvedev is not a stupid man, and he's not run by the mob or anything like that. he does articulate a very powerful current of opinion within the Russian Security Council. And if Putin really were to fall, let's say he were to retire now, let's say he were to become ill, then it would indeed be Medvedev who would take over.
Double Triple Down says, can China rise peacefully? Don't they want the Iran and Russian wars to continue? As long as peace between the United States and those countries cannot be achieved, China benefits.
I've actually heard Chinese people themselves say this. I mean, I had a conversation with a retired Chinese military officer, and he said that China is treating the Ukraine war as a massive laboratory of how wars are conducted and derives benefits from its prolongation. He did insist that China is not seeking to prolong the war, but it is capitalizing from the fact that the war is being prolonged. And I think this absolutely sums it up. The Chinese don't need to prolong any wars, because we in the West are doing it for them. We are doing it in Ukraine. We're doing it in the Middle East too.
Salimullah says, finally caught you guys live. Do you think the USA will put boots on the ground in Iran? Or how do you think this ends?
I've been told by many, many people that this is absolutely politically impossible. I am not so sure myself, because if things get to the point of absolute crisis, I mean, other than backing down completely and accepting a humiliating defeat, which isn't something the neocons will ever accept, putting boots on the ground seems to me to be the only answer. But I suspect that if we do get there, we are indeed going to see a major political crisis in the US. I think soldiers and their families and people who might be called up, I think an awful lot of them would protest. The same, by the way, applies to Germany and Russia. There's now talk of reintroducing conscription in Germany, basically to fight Russia. If you really want to radicalize the young in Germany and spawn an actual peace movement, that's the thing you do. You actually conscript them and give them a rifle and tell them, prepare to fight the Russians. They will oppose that vehemently. Of that, I have no doubt.
Trump hinted that it doesn't have to be U.S. boots on the ground. Is that a possibility?
I know.
Get someone else to fight the war?
Who's then? Israel?
You look at the Kurds. Kurds. Once again, yeah. You approach them again for the second or the third time, and you try to convince them.
Exactly. I don't think the Kurds are up for it. I don't think they're able to do it. So who exactly? I mean, if not the Kurds. Anyway, we'll see.
What do you think Trump was discussing with the Iraqi prime minister?
Very good question. I think that the Americans have played a very, very big role in ensuring that this particular Iraqi prime minister was appointed prime minister in place of someone else who was seen to be more pro-Iranian. But I think the major thing that they were talking about was action to try to control the various Shia militias in Iraq, which are a potential danger, and also to get Iraqi support over the issue of the Strait of Hormuz, which is now the overwhelming one.
Axel 007, shouldn't it be three-tier Kier? One group gets SAS protection, one gets to carry knives, and one gets arrested for being stabbed.
Perfect.
Stephen G 618 says, good day. With rumblings about the US SPR reaching all-time lows, how long until we have a serious fuel crisis in the West?
Well, I get to be very careful, because we got reports, if you remember, in March from people who were industry experts that it would really start to hit home by late March. And it didn't hit home fully by late March. And all sorts of people have come up with all sorts of reasons and explanations for this. So after that, I'm going to be very careful. All I will say is this. Donald Trump said, when he signed the MOU that there were 4 weeks of usable reserves left. So that's the president of the United States telling us that. Now, they've probably built up the reserves a little during the period of the MOU. There've probably been other ways of stocking up the reserves. There's apparently a big reserve which is earmarked for the military, but there's a possibility, of course, that they might tap into that. But I would guess sometime around the autumn, late autumn. And in Europe, of course, we're going to have even more problems because gas reserves in Europe are very low. We're going to have a high burn rate of gas this summer because of the hot summer. And I read on oilprice.com, which is the industry, the leading industry journal, that Europe is failing to get most of the LNG because most of it is going to Asia, where the Asians have deeper pockets and are prepared to pay more. That's why they're buying from Russia at the moment.
Mr. Jabouak says, where do I find out more about Barnes's In Real Life event? It's 1776 Law Center, and I'm trying to post that link right now.
Yeah.
In the chat. I just posted it, Mr. Right. Jabouak. So it's on in the chat right now.
Yes.
Fuzzy Ball says, how does Britain come up with so many ineffectual leaders that couldn't inspire a flea, let alone the population of a once great empire? Zero charisma.
Well, because we no longer have a functioning democratic system in Britain. I mean, the great political leaders of the past functioned within a system of real politics. We don't have real politics today. We have a revolving door of leaders who are picked for us by forces behind the curtain who are basically in control. And those forces do not want a strong and charismatic leader because a strong and charismatic leader might not carry out their orders. That's the simple answer.
Yeah. Bryn Tren says, first of all, thank you guys for the rational analysis. Haven't heard much about Haiti this last while. Any update on how things are going there?
No, I have not heard many things about Haiti at all. I don't think things are going well. And of course, in Cuba, they're going very badly. I mean, the Cubans bent over backwards to try and find some way forward with the Americans. I know for a fact they refused the second cargo of Russian oil. The Russians were furious about it. And now, of course, they're in a very, very bad mess.
Axel 007 says, there is a chance that I can't meet my father-in-law who is in Russia now, thanks to Boris Johnson. Why isn't Ukraine running out of men and world of oil?
Well, I would argue that the current political crisis in Ukraine is mostly about the fact that Ukraine is running out of men. The reason for this furious row between the uniformed military and Fedorov is that Fedorov was all about drones, and the uniformed military said, well, hold on, it's not working on the front lines. We don't have enough men to hold positions. And we discussed this, Alex and I, in a program we did, and then shortly after an editorial appeared in the Financial Times, which said the same thing. It referred to the Ukrainian army as exhausted and overstretched. And that is an editorial in the Financial Times. Now, can I just say, that editorial really made me feel very, very troubled, because the way it was written shows that the editorial writer knows an awful lot more about what is really going on in Ukraine than the Financial Times has been reporting over the last few weeks. So even as they've been reporting that Ukraine has turned the tide and is winning the war, they obviously know that the Ukrainian army is, as they say, exhausted and overstretched.
Sir Musgame says, is Andy Burnham Rachel Maddow's younger, dumber brother?
Very good question. Why did you ask him and her? Interesting to know the answer.
Yeah. Bogdan NZ says, have the Ukraine drones made any difference in regards to the Russians' support for Putin? Any recent poll numbers?
The last one I saw, which admittedly was about 2-3 weeks ago, put his trust rating at 77%. I've seen other claims that his trust rating has fallen to 69%. But those figures seem to me to date from earlier this year. It suggests that his poll rating has actually increased over the last few weeks. Now, that may seem paradoxical, but of course, in a time of crisis, when things tend to depend on the leader, people want to trust the leader, which may explain why his poll rating might be increasing. But that was, you know, a couple of weeks ago, about 2 or 3 weeks ago that I saw that poll. So it may be that things are different now. I mean, I just don't know.
Snarky Guy says, Alex, you can borrow my handle if you want. I appreciate the more realist views you've adopted over the past few years, so you're welcome to it. Thank you, Snarky Guy. Cool handle. Swanee212 says, the West has been taken over by Plato's sophists.
Something of that.
Yeah. Fuzzy Ball says, really all Russia has to do is take Odessa, Mykolaiv, and everything up to the eastern side of the Dnieper before Trump leaves office, then announce that they are ready to call a freeze to the conflict.
I suspect that there are some people, maybe around Putin, closer to Putin, who are saying that very thing. But I suspect that there are others who are saying that's not going to be enough. That if there is a millimeter of territory in Ukraine that is not under some kind of Russian control, might not be direct control, it might be control through a friendly government or something like that, there will always be a danger to Russia because NATO will simply move in, and the problems that Russia went into Ukraine to solve will not have been solved.
From Kudbro 21, for your smoke alarm, Alexander.
Thanks. I'm not sure, yeah.
Joker 84D says, the elites in the West are psychologically not able to accept defeat, so how could this ever end?
Well, that's the problem. I mean, I think you put your finger on the problem. I mean, we've discussed many times that the neocons have no reverse gear, and that applies also to their camp followers in Europe. They have no reverse gear. The idea of defeat is unimaginable to them.
Sir Mugs Game says, it's simple. Whatever the U.S. signs is for all intents and purposes an in memoriam of understanding.
You know, Lavrov has been saying this now.
Nico says, we saw the alternative with Iran. While the U.S. is far away from consequences, Iran is now in danger of starvation as the U.S. strikes their supplies. The Gulf countries might not get hit, but the U.S. might get hit, but the U.S. doesn't care. Every analyst I've seen says time is not on Iran's side as the U.S. chokes their economy. Iran stood up to the U.S. and it didn't deter them. They came immediately to the aid of the Gulf. Do you think they won't come to the aid of Europe?
I'm glad
Iran told China to pound sand because China isn't there or Russia's allies. Both countries are alone. So instead of whining about their inaction, how about we blame the real offenders? Okay.
I don't think anybody is whining about China's inaction. But first of all, just to say, I mean, I've seen many analysts, read many analysts. There are analysts, obviously, of a sort of neocon view who take your perspective of this conflict, the time is on the US's side. But I've seen many other analysts who take the absolute opposite view. The time is on Iran's side. And these analysts who think the time is on Iran's side are not limited to independent media. There was an article, a big article, about that very thing today in the Financial Times. And the writer of that article said exactly that time is on Iran's side. that they are confident that they can outstay the United States, that the United States is going to run out of weapons, precision-guided weapons, that the United States is going to face critical problems with energy. Sooner or later, sooner rather than later, it will be the Americans who are forced to come round. So, you know, there is that alternative view. And I'd say that it is at least as widespread, both in mainstream media and in independent media, as the view that you've just articulated, that time is on the US side. About famine and starvation in Iran, as I understand it, Iran is mostly self-sufficient in food. It's got very good relations with the country next door, Russia, which is one of the biggest world exporters of food. I doubt that starvation is going to be a problem. That is not to deny that Iran is not taking very significant blows and that the Iranian population isn't experiencing a great ordeal. But we saw, with Khamenei's funeral, that millions of people came out and appeared to support the continuation of the war and the existing political system.
Jay Bison says, is all this chaos delivered by Trump done to delay a U.S. default?
Well, that is an interesting question. I would have thought that it would do the opposite, not delay a default. I would have thought it would bring it closer. But then what do I know?
As Scooby says, with an AI bubble ready to pop, a robust Chinese industry with much cheaper and practical models, will they finally break the U.S.'s hold on the global information space?
Well, Xi Jinping has just made a speech on this very precisely on this subject. And reading between the lines, and you have to read a lot between the lines with Xi Jinping, that seemed to be exactly what he was saying. And we'll just have to see. I think it'd be very unwise in any technological competition to count the U.S. out, by the way.
Yeah. From the other side says, hello from Minsk, another great show.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Nikos says, I hope I didn't offend you. We don't always agree. Last time I disagreed with Alexander. I hope you understand that my challenge comes from respect.
Well, thank you, Nikos. I didn't think you were ever offended. I mean, if I can say, yeah.
Nope. Red Panda Pie says, European lawmakers call for investigation into FIFA. Gianni Infantino, I don't know if I should laugh or nothing. It's just laughable.
It is laughable. I agree. I mean, FIFA corrupt. What a surprise. Yeah. By the way, on that topic, just to say, my father, who was very, very into football, long ago actually had invited to our home some people from FIFA. And he said, aren't you a bit worried about all the money that is coming into FIFA? Isn't this going to be somewhat destabilizing? He said, no, don't worry at all. It's all coming into the sport. The sport is going to benefit from all this money. And I whispered, I was much younger than I whispered, what they mean is that the money's going to come to them and they're going to benefit from it. And I think events have proved me right.
Yeah.
I've never forgotten that meeting, by the way.
Yep, a lot has been revealed during this World Cup with Gianni Infantino. Yeah. Definitely. Iranian Kiddo says, Iran, having had the upper hand right after the ceasefire, it should have used this opportunity to strike a long-term peace with the United States that would benefit both countries.
If the United States was willing to do that, I would, of course, agree. We have said in programs, Alex and I, that a long-term peace between Iran and the United States is objectively good for both countries. We also said that the terms of the Memorandum of Understanding were objectively good for the United States. But the United States did not sign the Memorandum of Understanding with good faith. And by the way, the article I spoke about in the Financial Times says this. Mm.
Samuel Moroni says, are we in World War III split in pieces or in World War chaos?
You know, the Russians, some Russian officials said some time ago that, you know, we need to stop using the model of the two world wars to describe great power conflict today, that we are in effect in a kind of state of war, except that because of the existence of nuclear weapons, and indeed a very, very powerful other weapons, it doesn't manifest itself in the great clash of armies that it once did. That we are, but nonetheless, that we are in a period of intense conflict, which does involve fighting and death and killing and lots of other things. And he said that this is, in effect, a kind of world war. You can read that as you wish.
Israel should not exist, says there is a global game and only Russia, Iran, and China obey the rules while everyone else plays with no rules. If they are losing, just need to change some rules and that's it.
You know something, well, first of all, they're not, you mean the West, if they're losing. I think that one of the things always to remember about rules is that they exist for a reason. If they are there, if they have been created in the past to try to regulate conflict, it is because there was a general understanding that that was beneficial to all parties in a conflict. If one side is increasingly walking away and breaking the rules, then that is not a sign of ruthlessness or intelligence or confidence. Rather, it's a sign that they sense that things are going badly wrong. Now, when one side starts to break the rules, inevitably over time, the other side follows. We see this with the situation in the Black Sea. Ukraine started a week ago attacking grain ships in the Sea of Azov, which, by the way, is a war crime, just to say. So the Russians now are also attacking Ukrainian grain ships in Odessa. So ultimately, one escalation is matched by another. And if we're talking about the failure of the grain trade in the Black Sea, the biggest loser ultimately from that is going to be Ukraine, because the Russians can always export grain through other ports. The Ukrainians will find it much more difficult. There's now talk about them sending grain to Constanza, not by rail, as we discussed, but by barge along the Dniester River. Barges, of course, are vulnerable. But the thing to understand is that Constanza is probably not organized to export grain. I mean, there may not be the silos and the facilities there to store it and the machinery there to handle it, which, of course, in Odessa there was. So, yes, you can build all of that, but it will take you some months to do. In the meantime, Ukraine is facing severe problems and Odessa is under pressure, whereas the Russians, as they said themselves, do have alternative routes.
Sir Musgame says, Trump talked, walked, and had a crafty blema when talking to EU leaders. It's no. Almost as if he knows something is going to happen very soon. Is Sir Musgame Greek, to use the word blema?
Yes, I was going thinking the same thing, actually. It's a very good, yeah. Vlema is an extraordinary, there's no easy translation for it, but it's about your look.
Look,
yeah. Exactly. That it conveys an awful lot. It can convey strength and power, and it can convey cunning and wiliness as well, depending on the way it's used. And you've used it, if I could say, very intelligently there, which does make one wonder what your knowledge of Greek is, just to say.
Iranian Kiddo says, it wasn't wise for Iran to actively attack ships when the U.S. had issued a sanctions waiver that was opposed by both Democrats and Republicans, but Trump went ahead with it anyway for the first time.
But it wouldn't have lasted for very long. Of that, I'm absolutely confident. I mean, what the Americans were doing is quite obvious, is that they were keeping the Strait of Hormuz open in order to replenish their reserves, reduce the price of oil, help Trump to get through the midterms, and in all other respects, they were not moving forward with the provisions of the MOU. So what the Iranians realized is that what the Americans were doing was taking away Iran from Iran, its main leverage, which was control of the Strait of Hormuz. Well, as we said at the time.
Sir Mosgame says, big deal. Stalin turned on a dime and pumped cheap, reliable energy to West Germany, despite what had just happened.
Oh yeah, Stalin was a very interesting man and very thought about things in all sorts of ways that don't always correspond with the Western idea of him. Just saying.
From Geo Stone, China can't stop selling drone parts. Germany, France, UK, US use legitimate companies to purchase parts that end up in Ukraine.
Of course they can. If they can create a whole licensing system for rare earths, which is a very difficult thing to track, they can definitely do it with drone parts, just to say.
Kremena Antasoba, thank you for that super sticker. Jungle Jin says, Slavyangrad assesses Russia is at its weakest in the Black Sea, with Turkey and Romania planning post-war naval guarantees for Ukraine. Your comment?
I saw that. I saw that message. I think the thing to say about Slavyangrad is that it is a site aggregator. It doesn't necessarily reflect the opinions of the people who run it, and some people. I'm not going to speculate about who wrote that, but you do always get a side of Russian commentary that always looks at the worst outcome, and which, by the way, is legitimately deeply skeptical of Turkey. I don't think the Russians are at their weakest in the Black Sea. It is the Russians who have basically shut down Odessa, which is Ukraine's biggest port. And I think for Ukraine, that is a very serious matter indeed, far more serious than whatever problems the Ukrainians are causing for the Russians at the moment in the Sea of Azov.
Harry C. Smith says, if private buyers in Europe buy 1,000 hobby drones from private sellers in China, modify them and send to Ukraine, what's Chinese government supposed to do?
Well, I mean, at the moment, it can't do anything. But as I said, if it establishes a licensing system, then it can. Of course, licensing systems will reduce inevitably the export of drones and of drone parts. And there are some people in China who don't want to see that.
Sir Mosgame says, your guests love calling Trump crazy, deranged, dangerous, and the toddler. One thing they can't call him is a lame duck. That's for damn sure.
Well, I don't think he is a lame duck. I think that Trump still wields immense power in the United States, and he's still the ultimate decision maker.
Fuzzy Ball says, you would think that Europe would get tired of getting their asses kicked by Russia for centuries. It reminds me of the Monty Python episode with the guard that ends up with all his limbs cut off.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. The famous knight. Was it Monty Python and the Holy Grail? We never seem to learn that lesson. I mean, what invariably seems to happen, this has been the story in Europe over the last 250 years, is we have some system that brings together all the major European states, and then they all come together, and the one thing they can all agree upon is to attack Russia. We saw that with Napoleon, we saw that in the First World War, we saw that in the Second World War too. And by the way, we also saw it in the Crimean War as well, which people don't remember. So if we never seem to learn this lesson.
Iranian Kiddo says, Iran has now lost most of its leverage after attacking ships, now is regularly being bombarded. It's not even a headline anymore. It has become now a normality, like in countries like Lebanon.
Who, however, benefits best from this normality? Who has the longest power of endurance? Because this is ultimately what this is all about. My own view is that Iran had a very difficult choice. Both over signing the MOU, which it was warned would be a Minsk agreement at best, one which would not settle the conflict with the United States, and also over whether or not to reinforce, to restate its control of the Strait of Hormuz, which is what gives it leverage. The Iranians signed the MOU and then decided that they needed to reassert leverage. You can criticize the Iranian decisions, but they do make sense. And it's far too early to say that they're going to turn out to be wrong.
Geostone says, Canada to buy German submarines. Your thought? Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, you know, there's nothing new there. Germany, by the way, is a big exporter of submarines. Sells them to Greece, by the way.
Hmm. Snarky Guy says, my old man used to say, I brought you into this world, I could take you out, with his fist pumped jokingly. The puppet masters feel this way about us, not jokingly. It's all about population management.
I think there's a lot of truth in that.
Yeah. S. Scooby says, even if you assume China is selfish, they surely won't allow Iran or Russia to lose their respective wars. No?
I agree. Absolutely. I mean, in fact, the Chinese actually said this. Wang Yi told this to Kaya Kallas. He said to Kaya Kallas straightforwardly that, and this was in connection with Russia, that it is in China's own interests that Russia win in Ukraine. I mean, it was a very, very angry, contentious discussion that lasted, well, many, many hours between Kaya Kallas and Wang Yi. And since then, Wang Yi has refused to meet her, by the way. So, but anyway, it takes an awful lot to push that kind of admission out of the Chinese foreign minister, but he made it.
USA Now on Locals. Thank you for that meme of Lindsey Graham, and also a meme image of Alexander of Mitch McConnell. Hospital image of Mitch McConnell. Yeah. Crazy stuff with that McConnell image. Muggs Game, Sir Muggs Game says, every Greek politician understands that their communications are completely compromised, so they always stick to the script. Ask Varoufakis.
Yes, I agree.
VYT says, during war, EEZs, even of neutral countries, can be interfered with. Iran can argue in multiple ways the Gulf countries aren't neutral. That would pretty much make their blockade in Oman's EEZ legal, no?
I said that after the start of the campaign on the 28th of February, that Iran had a strong legal position then because it had been attacked, and that closing the Strait of Hormuz could be presented as a legitimate act of self-defense. It's more difficult after the signing of the MOU to do that. But I still think that Iran has an arguable case.
Alex Stevenson, thank you so much for that amazing super chat. Jeff Files 5217, when will the people of Ukraine all suddenly realize they are all slated for death?
Good question. I personally think that one of the reasons we saw those protests yesterday was not because large numbers of people in Ukraine believe in this legend of Mikhail Fyodorov. Some do, but I think an awful lot of them understand exactly what this is all about. Bringing in a new, very hardline defense minister, Klimenko, who is the head of the police, and rounding up more and more of their men and sending them to the battlefields. And I think this is what triggered a lot of the protests.
Dick Sprout says, at the Duran next Davos meeting plus hazelnut equals problem solved. You got to make these people fear their mortality.
Well, I am sure a lot of people in Russia are tempted, but of course, what you are talking about would be an act of war, which might precipitate a larger war, which I think the Russians at the moment want to avoid.
Iranian kiddo, this government has failed Iran in every possible way. Economically, they have devastated Iran, a country that before 79 had an economy bigger than Turkey and Saudi. They have also completely destroyed Iran's natural resources.
Well, I'm not here to discuss the success or otherwise of Iran's government. I mean, I've heard some things about Iran. I mean, that since 1979, for example, that there's been a significant spread of literacy, that women have been much more successful in getting higher education, and that there was a great deal of investment in infrastructure. Having said all of that, I'm not here to defend Iran. All I am saying is that you can understand some of the decisions that Iran is taking now. And in any discussion of Iran and what has happened since 1979, you cannot overlook the pressures that Iran itself has been under over the course of this period. A long, terrible war in the 1980s, sustained sanctions pressure ever since, constant threats of conflict, the need to divert resources into military defense, all sorts of things. I criticized the Iranians many times. I've said that I think that they're difficult people to help. This is what I've heard many people say. But, I think you're being on the hard side.
Fuzzy Ball says, are Britons aware that their leaders in the government are all colluding together to steal from the public services to launder that money through the money laundering scheme called Ukraine?
I don't think so. I think that there are some people, obviously, who do understand it. But there is so little debate about Ukraine here in Britain. And remember, we don't have a big independent media such as exists in the United States. So there's so little debate about this here that I don't think people in Britain have yet figured it out and put all the pieces together in the way that you say.
From Mr. Jabberwock, when will you interview Larry the Cat?
Larry the Cat. Well, I think that would be an amazingly good interview because he would provide us with sound and objective opinions, charting the proper way forward for Britain to take.
True. Very true. 041101213 says, I am hopeful there won't be another world war as the West is disorganized and broke. Supply chains are fragile and factories take many years to establish.
I too hope that. And I also believe that in the end, we will avoid the worst. But I'm not as confident about it as I was, say, 5 years ago.
Zizi Karayanis, thank you for that super sticker. Stephen G618 says, UK real politics is now Binface versus Farage.
I think that Farage actually is now winning through. With hindsight, I think it was a mistake for Labour and Conservatives not to fight him in this by-election. This is his moment of greatest weakness. And there's been a lot of shock in Britain over the Anne Whittingham murder. And I think that Farage has been able to, this sounds a bit, opportunistic and calculating. I don't mean it in those terms, but he has again been the person who's come out and said the necessary things about it.
Sir Musgame says, Count Binface is the joke candidate to distract from the other joke candidates, the Farage Mirage, all designed to disillusion the punters from voting.
Well, I have lost a lot of my former respect for Farage over the last few years, but I still think he's an extremely effective politician.
Mr. Jabberwock says, do you ever hear anything about Malawi? My cousin's father-in-law is the Malawian president. Interesting.
No, I don't. I mean, once upon a time, I used to hear an awful lot about it. We should, we always say this, that we are terrible about covering Africa. But again, there's so little time.
Yeah. Sparky says, great work, Alex Alexander. I'm too late to the stream to think of a question, but still want to be supportive. Thank you for your efforts.
Thank you, Sparky,
for that. Great to have you here. Vincent says, how do you assess current Russia-Kazakhstan relations, and do you see any risk of Kazakhstan experiencing a Ukraine scenario? Thanks.
I think it is very unlikely. There was a program that Stanislav Krapivnik did about Kazakhstan, which he knows very well. And he said that the internal demographic structure of Kazakhstan and the economic linkages would mean that if Kazakhstan were to end up in a conflict with Russia, it would not survive, and it would not be like Ukraine. It would be a collapse that would take place much, much faster. So I think that the Kazakhs test the Russians. They play this game with the Russians. They keep their money in the West. They do all of this sort of thing. But ultimately, they're never going to break with the Russians. And I think that's ultimately the policy that they will continue to follow.
Arcane Eclectic says Spain 2, Argentina 0. That's the prediction.
Oh, right. That's a prediction.
Iranian Kiddo says they also permanently damaged Iranian social cohesion through push for their inflexible, involuntary headscarf laws, leading to the protests in the fall of 2022. Women can wear what they want now, but they had to fight for it.
Well, indeed. Again, I'm not here to defend the Iranian government. The point is that they can wear or not wear now what they choose. And I think that has taken some of the tension out of the situation, the internal situation in Iran.
John Winston says, do you anticipate the rise to power of the AfD National Front in Germany and France anytime soon? Would Rupert Lowe or Liz Truss tail a different stance on Russia? Is that why she was really pushed out?
Well, I will. The AfD and Le Pen's National Front are completely different creatures. I mean, I don't even particularly like each other, as I understand it. The AfD is, in my opinion, much more the real thing than Marine Le Pen is, who's gone out of her way to get herself accepted by the French establishment. So do bear that in mind. I think there's a chance, I don't know how high it is, that Marine Le Pen will become president of France next year. But I don't think anybody should have expectations that that will lead immediately to any great changes in France. The AfD have a much longer, harder, more rocky road. But I suspect that internal tensions in Germany are probably now pretty great, and they may be able to capitalize on it. About Rupert Lowe and Liz Truss, two completely different politicians. The idea of Liz Truss, of all people, taking a different view than the establishment on Ukraine, I'm afraid it shows an ignorance of her. She was a fervid advocate of Project Ukraine, both as foreign secretary and as prime minister. So she would certainly not have changed approach. She might have differed from parts of the establishment on economic policy, but certainly not on foreign policy. Rupert Lowe, I don't know enough about to be able to say. Maybe yes, but we'll just have to see how he develops. Until very recently, he didn't seem to be somebody who had any real chance of getting it established in the political system. Now that is beginning to change.
Mr. Jijum says, boots on the ground in Iran, if is impossible because there is no 9/11 yet, but say Trump got assassinated and blamed on Iran once again.
Well, let's not speculate about scenarios like that. I mean, I hope very much that nothing like that happens. If it does happen, we will be in an unimaginably different place, and we will have to analyze it then.
Iranian Kiddo says removing sanctions would be worth far more to Iran's economy than Hormuz toll. Meanwhile, the military launches missiles from beneath the granite mountains, yet the people, the economy, and infrastructure continue to pay the price, not the government.
You see, this is where I differ with you. Why do you think that the United States has any interest in lifting sanctions on Iran? I don't believe it ever will. The only circumstance where it might do that is if we had a return to a kind of dictatorship, such as the one that the Shah had, which my sense is unacceptable to most Iranians.
Iranian Kiddo says, Iran should offer incentives for Americans to normalize relations and do business in Iran, as Trita Parsi had suggested, but they would never do that. In the eyes of the government core loyalists, it has always been a hard no.
Well, there are some people in Iran who always say a hard no, but there are lots of people in Iran who say otherwise. And I have massive respect, by the way, for Trita Parsi. But remember, Iran negotiated the JCPOA. It appeared to be working well. There's no evidence Iran violated it. It was the Americans who walked away from it. You could argue that the big story in relations between Iran and the United States from about the early 2000s until fairly recently is of various so-called reformist presidents and prime ministers coming to power in Iran. Pezeshkian, in a sense, is just the latest iteration. All of them trying to find some way back to good relations with the Americans and having the door slammed in their face. I think you underestimate how unreasonable the neocons in the United States actually are.
Seven Destroyer says, don't agree with you guys at all when it comes to geopolitics, but love listening to both of you. Funny, intelligent, and well-read.
Thank you.
Thank you, Seven Destroyer. Mm-hmm. I like the, I think that's a Thundercat icon, okay. I think. Cool. Iranian Kiddo says, the problem is that Iran is run by a group of revolutionaries. They're highly ideological and backed by a minority of the population, about 20%, that is intensely religious and among the loudest and most expressive.
Well, perhaps, but don't underestimate the effect of ideology in the United States too. And arguably, an even smaller group of people are in charge of ideology in the United States. And the problem is, they seem to have a lot grip on it.
Pathetic Albion says there won't be any boots on the ground any more than there have been boots on the moon. A million Iranian troops are awaiting these 50,000 lambs, and Iran has 12 million more of fighting age to back them.
Well, maybe. And I mean, that is arguably the rational calculation. But as I said, we are dealing with situations which are not always rational. The current war is irrational. I mean, Alex made the point some programs ago that the entire argument now is about the Strait of Hormuz, not even about nuclear enrichment anymore. The same point, by the way, was made by someone writing again in the Financial Times. But if we're talking about the Strait of Hormuz, the Strait of Hormuz was open to traffic before the 28th of February, before Iran was attacked. So we saw a decision to attack Iran, which has backfired catastrophically.
I think the Financial Times is just taking our stuff, Alexander.
Oh, I'm pretty sure they
constantly have, taking our stuff.
I'm pretty sure they have.
Yeah. Damn it! By the way,
I'm not entirely joking. By the way.
Ladoshka, thank you for gifting the Duran 5 memberships, the Duran community, and Ahriman gifted the Duran community 10 memberships. Thank you so much for that. And Alexander G also gifted the Duran community 10 memberships.
Thank you.
Sparky says, make Ukraine Russia again. Don't leave a rump state called Ukraine. Least it remain a NATO playground, a carpetbagger's money laundry, and a BlackRock property.
I think I said already there are people in Russia who are increasingly saying that.
Sir Muzgame says, question no one has asked, how are Israel's strategic reserves doing? I'm sure they're fine. The great defender of the region, Erdo, makes sure of that.
I have no idea, but Israel is a small, relatively small country. I can't imagine that their reserves are that deep.
Yeah. Stichiman, thank you for that super chat. Iranian Kiddo says, chants, propaganda banners, and religious flags all over the country won't help Iran economically. You can't run a country where death and martyrdom are valued more than living. There's no future for this country with that mindset.
Well, I think we can agree to a great extent about that. But as I said, to repeat again, don't overestimate the degree of rationality on the other side, on the American side. At the moment, we're seeing a catastrophic deficit of it. And that, it seems to me, is the immediate problem. There were deals available on the table to sort out the problem of Iranian nuclear enrichment. There'd been proposals made by the Iranians. There'd been proposals made by the Russians. There'd been proposals made by some of the Gulf states. The Iranians were prepared to work with all of them. It was the United States, in the end, that took the decision, despite the fact that negotiations were underway and appeared to be making progress. It was the United States that took the decision to start the war.
Jungle Jin says, how much leverage could Turkey exert via the Montreux Protocol to implement its anti-Russian Black Sea policies?
Well, I think if Turkey does something like that, it would end up being a crisis for Turkey. And I think Erdogan, who is many things, but is no one's fool, understands that very well. He has actually exercised the Montreux Protocols faultlessly and to Russian advantage. He has kept NATO warships out of the Black Sea.
Sparky says, I remember a few years ago reading many positive reviews on drone parts, drone jammers, and other military electronics on Alibaba. They were written by Ukrainian soldiers.
Well, there you go.
Iranian Kiddo says, every time there have been rumors of normalization with the West, these 20% come out of their holes with their banners and start chanting.
And every time there have been rumors of normalization with the West, you see that people in Israel and people like Lindsey Graham in the United States also come out and oppose it. I mean, there have been many attempts at normalization between Iran and the United States. And again, it seems to me that the Americans are at least as responsible for the fact that it hasn't happened as the people that you're talking about in Iran itself. The same is true, by the way, of North Korea. We were talking about it before. There was a whole framework agreement set out between the United States and the North Koreans in the 1990s. And it was sabotaged by John Bolton and his friends. And we all see the result.
Yep. Yep. John Bolton. Sir Musgame says, alas, I am but a humble, uneducated Greek peasant just trying to make sense of a world that frightens and confuses me.
You're not humble, uneducated, or a peasant.
Thank you, Sir Musgame, for that. Michael in Taiwan says, addiction is common among elites. I wonder if Western leaders, like the Nazis, are out of their minds on coke and speed. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, you're making a sound historical point. One of the things that we've gradually come to know is the extent to which in Germany in the 1940s, during the Second World War, the enormous use of drugs amongst the political leadership. So that is something that has only come out fully in recent years, but it is now well documented. And it is fully accepted academic history. About elites today, well, what can I say? I have no statistics here. All I will say is that my own sense, when I was closer to elite circles in London, is that things were very bad in relation to what you were saying, and that it did affect decisions. But it's very difficult to quantify. And ultimately, of course, it doesn't take away responsibility from what people do.
Sticky Mark says, another peace fire Friday is upon us. Don't lose hope and enjoy your weekend. Love from this Nana Weirdo in Yorkshire.
Thank you.
Thank you for that, Sticky Marks. Iranian Kiddo says, they have kept Iran at a standstill for 40 years. Majority of Iranians just want a normal life. Even the Iran-Iraq war wouldn't have happened. It was a direct result of government angering the Americans after the hostage crisis.
Well, maybe. I mean, we can go back and we can talk about what happened all the way back to the overthrow of Mossadegh and beyond. But we are where we are. And to repeat again, don't underestimate the lack of rational decision-making in Washington. It is very, very strong there. And I would argue in Israel too. I mean, Israel ought to want peace in the Middle East, given that ultimately it is vulnerable itself in the event of war. But his leadership, or at least some parts of his leadership, always seek war instead. And they have been major players in bringing us into conflict with Iran, with all sorts of other countries in the Middle East. And some of them, of course, now are talking about conflict with Turkey.
Fuzzy Ball says, what will it take for Britons to wake up to the Ukraine scam? We woke up here in the United States. Are they going to let us Americans keep mocking them for believing? Will it take 5 years, 10 years?
A defeat in Ukraine, if there is a major defeat in Ukraine with the political repercussions that follow from that, then over time, a lot of things will come out into the open.
Sparky says, in the old days in the U.S., rare earths were only occasionally needed. So they were refined in a small lab. Why not commute sentences and repurpose many, many mom and pop meth labs to rare earth refineries? Interesting idea, yeah. Mr. Sancho Relaxo says, any thoughts on the eschatological angle? Chabad Lubavitch would have the world turn against Israel before the big rapture. Seems the plan is working.
I hope not. I mean, I don't want to discuss these sort of things. I mean, fundamentally, they're so contrary to my own beliefs that I hope we don't find ourselves in any kind of situation like that, just to say.
Sir Muggs Game says, Alex, you have hot geopolitical competition. Rachel is doing walk and talks now. Okay, thank you for that, Sir Musgame. Iranian Kiddo says, most Iranians don't want to talk about these hard facts. We try to keep criticisms to ourselves because we love our country and we don't want to be used as tools by the neocons like the monarchists were to destroy our own country.
Well, exactly the same way that you find many people in Britain, for example, don't want to talk about these things. They don't want to talk about policies that have been ruinous for Britain, and I suspect very much for the same reasons.
Zachary Morrison says, will you have Richard Medhurst on to discuss his analysis regarding the actual U.S. goals to dominate energy markets and block China? He argues that the U.S. is accomplishing its goals rather than losing.
I know he is. I should say that I don't agree with his analysis, by the way. But, I mean, that's not a reason for not having him on our programs. Perhaps one day we will.
Salim Mullah says, what's the actual solution for Palestine?
I don't know. Once upon a time, I used to think a two-state solution was the way forward. I think after the events of the last few years, I think that's become much more difficult. What I would say is, and I've said this many times, if there are good faith negotiations, which there never have been, by the way, then what often happens out of good faith negotiations is that solutions that nobody imagined start to appear. And maybe the best thing is for people who are not parties to this conflict, people like me, to avoid saying what we think should happen and leave it to the people in the conflict themselves to come up with the solutions themselves.
ZX2V40 says top notch. Thank you for that super chat. Win the Dog says, your mod Harry is totally biased. Okay. Win the Dog. Sir Musgame says, if IRGC boomers push the Hormuz tax too far, IRGC Gen Xers will give their geo locations to the Israelis. Almost everyone will be happy.
I think one should not underestimate the sophistication of the IRGC, by the way. I mean, one thing that's become very clear over the last few months is that this is an extremely sophisticated organization.
Josh Winston says, thank you both for everything you do. What is the status of Russian-Israeli relations?
They are still reasonably cordial, and they still talk to each other. I mean, Netanyahu and Putin still talk to each other, for example. So there's not been a complete breakdown or rupture, but they're nowhere near as friendly as they used to be. The Russians have made no secret that they strongly disagree with Israeli policy towards Syria, Lebanon, the Palestinians, and Iran.
Flip Shibby says, what is the Durand's mission statement? Who is Podolyak? Why do each of you still do this now?
It's Podolyak. Alex.
It's Podolyak. I don't know. Does he have a position in the government anymore, Alexander?
I don't think so. No, I think he's resigned.
But he's still there.
He's still there, yes.
Yeah, he's like Yermak. He was there.
Exactly. Yeah. They're all there. They're all part of Zelensky's team. Well, I think to sum up our position, I mean, we are a realist geopolitical channel. Realism, to repeat again, as we said many times, does not mean that we throw away ethics or anything of that type. Our argument is that a realist position that looks at the world as it is a more ethical one than some of these fantastic, strange, visionary things that come out around the world in the United States and elsewhere, which are always recipes for disaster.
Alexander, your final thoughts?
Well, I think it's been an amazing live stream altogether. Some very, very perceptive questions. We are in a very, very difficult place in the world now. I think what a lot of people want to see is the Russians hurry up and resolve the situation in Ukraine, because I think there is a feeling that if they do, then things will begin to settle down. And I think a lot of the frustration with Putin comes from that. But we will see what happens.
Yeah, we are in a very bad place, Alexander.
No.
Unfortunately. All right. We will end the live stream there. Thank you to everyone that joined us on Odyssey, on Rumble, YouTube, and our community on Locals, theduran.locals.com. Thank you to our moderators. Harry, thank you so much for moderating. Zarael, thank you for moderating as well. And I think those were our moderators, Alexander. So thank you so much to Harry and Zarael. And I think that's it.
That's it.
We got videos that we need to.
We absolutely do. All right,
everybody. Take care.
Take care.